Hello?
Hello, Jean.
Yes, Jeremy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. How are you? Can you hear me good?
Yep, fine.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm trying to record with my headphones on, but they don't seem to be working, so we'll just talk right into the computer screen.
Okay.
Okay.
And you.
Would you prefer that I call you Jean or Jean-Benoît?
No, Jean is fine.
Oh,
Yeah, Jean
okay.
Benoit doesn't mean anything in English.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to Stir the Pots, first of all.
Thank you.
And
I'm glad
first
to be on the
question.
phone with you.
Oh, thank you. My first question is, how did you get involved in the olive oil business?
Well, it goes back to a real passion, a real hobby. As long as we've been together with my wife, Catherine, we've had olive trees. When we were in California, we had small olive trees in the field, in the backyard. We had olive trees in Arizona. We owned a little bit of land in France at that time where we had some trees, and it's always been a passion. It's a really very easy to fall in love with an olive tree.
And what were you doing in the States exactly?
I studied in southern France. I studied electronics and automation, and I moved to San Jose, California, in the early 80s to develop a new type of machines that my boss would not let me do in France. And we designed the first what's called a vertical furnace for the microelectronics business in 1984.
And what was it that made you join the what you could, and this is a pun, I'm sure, the saturated oil market?
Yes, olive oil is definitely a commodity. Well, when you love that tree, you always think that you can bring something to the party. For example, southern France has it's a very small producing area, 0.5% of the world production. But the trees are very old; they are 400 or 500 years old. And we, the way the olive oil was pressed and promoted was not up to the respect owed to those trees. For example, when a tree is very old, an oil is a very concentrated, very deep taste, very long on the palate. The local means of extraction were not really showing that. And we knew we could bring something to that by developing and introducing techniques to extract the best, of those fruits.
And can you sort of describe the process of making oil?
Yes, it's actually it's been the same for thousands of years, even though the technology evolves. We we harvest the tree, we harvest the fruits at a certain time. That harvest time is really key to the taste of the oil. So first you have to decide when to harvest, and we can go back to that later. Then once you have the olives, we wash the olives. We wash them in water. So we take away all the dust, all the residues that may be on the olives itself. Then we crush the olives. We use a crusher, and there is many methods here. The best one being the one that goes fast, so we don't oxidize. The one that is contained in an environment which is confined, minimum possible oxygen. Another factor is to reduce the amount of heat. And also a machine which is easy to clean. So we developed such a crusher with an Italian company. Then you go into a step once you crush, and you crush everything, including the peat. Then from there, you go into a step which is called a malaxing or kneading, like the dough for the bread. And there, you're going to knead the paste for about 20 to 50 minutes. That steps is going to extract the oil contained in the vegetal cells, and put it together with the other little bag of oil containing the other cells to form drops and little petal that's going to appear on the paste. That step is absolutely necessary because that's where the oil is going to acquire its taste. An olive oil as such in an olive in the cell has no taste. It's the action of kneading it that is going to bring it some taste. From there, we go to this, after spending 20 minutes, we go to the actual press. And there is two methods to extract the oil at that point. One, which is to push the paste against two discs, and that's the classic ancient methods. But there you need a media to maintain the paste together. And or you use a centrifuge where you're going to spin the paste into a standstill cylinder, and the pressure, like a merry-go-round, and the pressure against the wall is going to extract an emulsion containing both water and oil. That same machine, by spinning that liquid, is going to separate the water, which is going to form a ring, and the oil, because the oil is lighter, so the oil is going to float above the water with a spinning action of the system. After that press, once we get to obtain the oil, we go to a separator, a vertical separator, the same we use to separate the cream from the milk. And the idea here is to separate whatever heavy particles remain in the oil from the oil itself, so we don't risk any future fermentation in the bottle. Once we have an oil which is still cloudy, you know, ready, it's ready. It's actually ready to go in the vat. And one of the peculiarity of Castellas is the fact that the meal sits above the vats. So we go with gravity directly through the floor to the vats, so we don't use any pumps and we don't damage the oil any further than we have done so far.
Very interesting. And the byproduct, the leftover sediment and stuff, is used for anything? Are you
That's actually a good question, Jeremy. It's a very pertinent question. The pumice left over from the press represent 80% of the harvest. 80% of the harvest was wasted up to nowadays. What we do with it, we take it back to the fields, and we put it back in the fields as a fertilizer. And so that way we harvest 100% of the olives, and we bring back 80% back to the tree. Consequently, we only need to compensate for the 20% that we took for the oil, and so we don't fertilize as much as we used to.
And what different ranges of olive oil do you make? Is it strictly virgin olive oil, or?
Yes, we only make extra virgin olive oil. We don't make any other type of olive oil. We are small, and it doesn't make sense for us to make anything else.
And why do you think France makes only about, I've looked this up, 2,400 tons of oil in comparison to, say, Spain and Italy?
Well, it's in terms of percentage, believe it or not, it's only 0.5% of the world production. And it's just about the same quantity as California. For many reasons. Number one, the cost of land in Provence is very, very high. And so it's very difficult today to find some land where you can grow some trees. It's very expensive. And you have to be lucky, as I am, to be able to acquire some olive trees, and I have to thank your country for allowing me to do that. And by the way, I don't know if I can say that, but the American dream really exists. I'm very thankful to that. So that's the first factor. The second factor was there is water where we are. Water is available, even though we have big droughts. There is a ground table. So a water table on the ground. So what's happening is people would rather produce, you know, tomatoes, vegetables, peaches, apricots, and wherever the olive tree have remained is really where the land is very, very, very poor and nothing else would grow. And that's where we are today. We are now gaining back some production, but it's a very small progression.
And do you think that just because olive oil is primarily what you grow there, that is why the soil is weak and you can't grow other things really. I mean, I know Provence is really known for fruits and almonds and things like that, but there is some wine production there too.
Yes.
But it's just the terroir itself is just that's the sort of land it is. It's very rocky, I guess, right?
And what's happening with that is the fact that you concentrate. The olive trees here don't produce as much as they do in Spain or in southern Italy. It's more like Tuscany. We have steepy hills, poor soil, small amount of production, of production, sorry. Consequently, we have a fairly well concentrated aromas because it's not as much diluted by the quantity of fruits the tree has to grow. We only have 2 kilos to 2 to 10 kilos, which would be 1 pound to 20 pounds per tree, which is very, very small.
So that I suppose is why your olive oil is so unique then in taste.
It's I believe it's part of the reason. The age of the trees, when they get older, they produce less, but more concentrated. The amount of fruits per tree, which is smaller. The roots have to go very far horizontally to pick up some food because they are in a poor ground.
Right. Well, I mean, I've seen Jean de Florette, the movie, and there's that horrible drought in the movie. And you said you were going through that experience of drought right now. How difficult is that for an olive oil producer?
And what's interesting is I admire your culture, and it's nice to be able to watch such a movie. It's also, it's a movie that makes you cry.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
also a movie that makes you laugh.
Yeah.
So, as they used to make them a long time ago. The story there is coming back. What's funny is that history always comes back to us. It's exactly the case right now. We have a big drought, and about 80% of our territory here in Les Baux de Provence, about 80% of that territory is non-irrigated. Only 20% of the trees are irrigated. And I was, when I took those trees back in 1988, that's about 10 years ago, I put a watering system. Coming from Arizona, for me, that was something which was totally natural. And I use a very good technology of watering, which saves water, and I use a watering system made in Israel. And for me, it was natural. At that time, the old people thought I was totally crazy. But today, if you irrigate your tree, you produce a very good quality olives without any big needs for water. If you don't use water, the olives are very dry, and we have to add water at the mill to be able to process the paste. If you add water in the process, you wash all the good things in the oil, and you make a very poor olive oil. To make a long story short, whatever is irrigated makes a better quality oil than what is not. And that's different than the wine business. That's one of the difference with the wine. In the wine business, if you irrigate, you tend to dilute.
And what is the similarities with the wine business?
Similarities are, if you are truthful to what you are, if you produce, if you are very honest about what you do, you will end up making something which is somewhere to your image and is good quality. If you look at the short-term return, and I believe it's the same everywhere in agriculture, if you look for a short-term return, you will make something which is not up to the highest possible standards. So that's one of the similarities. The other one is blending. You can't, we blend different varieties of olives, of oil produced from different type of olives, to make our oil. And that way we gain complexity, length on the palate, stability, without the need to make it too powerful. Same thing with wine. A blended wine, I would have to give you some example, like the wine from Northern California. Some, the blends I believe are wonderful. All the Meritage, what's called Meritage, make very good wine to me, better than single varietal. The other similarities is ripening. The wine people are 40 years ahead of us, and we're going through the same story as they did 40 years ago, studying the ripening of each varieties based on each local area where they grow. And it's really difficult with an olive because you have no sugar, you cannot use color to tell you if it's ripe or not. We actually have to crush small batches, taste it, and it's very pungent, and then decide whether or not it's ripe.
Uh-huh.
And so the decision of the ripening, same as the wine people, is also very, very key. And that's where it stops, because it's not as fun to drink olive oil as it is to drink wine.
Uh-huh. Well, what is the best way to taste olive oil, to gather that flavor and to acknowledge how good it really is?
That's also an interesting question. I found that olive oil can lie. It's a product because it covers your cells, that tasting cells in the mouth. It's really difficult to be able to tell one from another when they are good. What you may do to help with that is put it on a steamed potato, or boiled potatoes, you actually dispose of two or three on a plate, two or three potatoes, and you generously spray them with each olive oil, and that way the heat of the potato is going to develop the taste of the oil, and you'll be able to tell the difference between one and another much more easier than it is just to swallow it cold.
Uh-huh. Because a lot of people, when I go to tastings, will have it with a piece of bread. And when I first met you at Williams-Sonoma a couple of years ago, I grabbed the little cup you had and tossed it right down, and it was like, wow, it was vibrant. It was like, I could taste things that reminded me of a lot of food that I prepare.
Mm-hmm. This is actually the best way to do it. The best way to do it is to do it raw, and you keep it in the mouth for a little while, and then you swallow some air through that liquid to be able to get your back throat to really make the taste for you, and it's actually you actually slurp. It's really very it's an ugly noise, but it's the best, most efficient way to taste an olive oil.
Uh-huh. Because you said the olive oil trees are so old, what is the lifespan of an olive oil tree?
To be honest, Jeremy, we don't know. There are some trees which are thousands of years old.
Uh-huh.
The saying goes by, it's a tree that doesn't die. It's a perpetual tree. By the way, the funny things I'm discovering with that tree, because it doesn't die, is the fact that because of that it doesn't need to reproduce. Nature has given it such a long life span that it doesn't make olive very easily. If it doesn't reproduce this year, it will next year, or 2 years from now, or 10 years from now. So that's why it's a tree that is not very generous with its fruits.
Uh-huh. Because it's so good, of course.
Yes.
And but you said you were growing, you were planting trees. So does that mean you're expanding your
absolutely,
farm?
Absolutely. Castellas has been very successful, and it's a limited production. Castellas is based on 80 acres, 40 metric hectare, uh-huh. 80 acres, and we cannot grow it anymore. We are in a limited area, and this is it. So the production cannot expand.
Uh-huh.
But the demand for such a product is expanding. So to solve that problem and keep Castellas where it is, as being a very high-end product and with a lot of followers, we are planting young trees in an area which is nearby, and it's gonna have a name called Castelline. Instead of being Castellas, it's gonna be Castelline in French, or Castelline in English, and it will be an oil almost as good, less expensive, and an excellent quality price ratio.
Uh-huh. And you also make like an olive paste, I noticed.
Yes.
And is that well just informed. From the fruit itself, but or with the green or the paste from the fruit, not from the pit of the olive?
It's absolutely. It's what people know is usually about paste, they know tapenade.
Uh-huh.
And tapenade contains anchovy and contains caper.
Right.
It's usually good, excellent, but It's good because of the caper, it's good because of the anchovy, it's good because of everything. Now, what we'd like to do is to make products as simple as they can, and they have to be good just because the olive is good. So that's why we decided to promote our olive paste, which we used to make for us here. And what we do with that is we harvest a variety of olive called Grossan. It's a local olive, one of the four we have here locally. And we wait for this one to be overripe. Uh-huh. So we harvest it at the end of December. And then we take the pits away, the skin, we crush it, we take the skin, we filter it, we take the skin away. What's left is a paste. We add a little bit of oil to it, and this is it. We make an olive paste with it. And believe me, it's simple, natural, and it's tremendously good in pasta and puree, potatoes, smashed potatoes.
Uh-huh. And is your olive oil farm organic, or is it not yet organic?
The north, we are converting the trees. I'm sure you know, Jeremy, by now, and maybe your listeners will glad to know. The French are always good to wash their clothes cleaner than everybody else, so that's what they want to believe. It's a French saying. So when it comes to organic, the rules here are very, very, very stringent. We are converting half of our production to organic, and we've been doing that for the last 2 years, and it takes 3 years, and actually in the fourth year that we can display the label organic. So Castellas will be organic 2 years from now.
Uh-huh. And you're also part of the AOC. Can you tell us a little bit about what AOC is?
Yeah, AOC is an interesting thing. AOC was developed at the turn of the 20th century by the wine makers. It stands for Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, in English, Protected Designation of Origin. What it is, it's producers get together and decide that what they grow, what they make, whatever that is, deserve a protection under the law. And it's a process that takes 10 years. The lawmaker look at it and says, okay, let's verify why your product is so unique. Has it been made that way for many, many years? Is it different than what we can find somewhere else? And so on and so forth. In the end, if they are successful, and many of them are not, the lawmaker writes a law, turns that into a decree, and that decree becomes the protected, and that's why there is a word protected, designation of origin. And we did that for the olive oil. We obtained in label our protection in 1997, and the process started in the late 80s. And that's what the AOC is. Uh-huh. I believe some people are doing the same thing, believe it or not, in Northern California to protect the production of olive oil in that territory around Yuba, because there are some very old trees. And I really sincerely hope they will be able to succeed, because when you buy a product, you buy a taste, you buy a brand, but you also buy somewhere a piece of culture. It's like it may look like a luxury, but it's actually I think very key in our buying habits to relate to a piece of culture when we buy something.
Well, in some ways, you're then an artisan, then, in your own right.
Unfortunately, I'm too hands-on to be characterized as an artist, Jeremy. It's a world that doesn't apply to me, unfortunately. I'd like to be an artist, but I just can't. We're just people that try to drive those trees for whatever life will give us as time. Let's say we grow them for another 20 years that we have good on us. And those trees are 400, 500 years old. We are just one of the people that drove them for that time. And many, many other people will in the future.
Uh-huh. And what is your competition around you like? Do you ever compare your olive oil to others that are making the same product as you?
Yes. My gauge in terms of quality. Locally, we are different. We're a little bit out of the box because we came back from a long stay abroad and with ideas which are a little bit different than what they are locally here. We also immediately gauged ourselves to the best production worldwide. For example, there is wonderful Tuscan oil, but above that, there are wonderful Sicilian oils. And we knew about those oils because having lived in the States for so long, we had been able to buy superb products. You are citing Williams-Sonoma, but in your region, I think about Zabar's, I think about Dean & DeLuca, of course, Sur La Table, Williams-Sonoma, all those shops carry wonderful products. And so we knew that the gauge was very high in other places. Now, locally, we are being followed, and that's wonderful, by people that want to do the same thing as we do and, you know, harvest earlier, you know, take a lot of care about pressing. And the area here is becoming a very, very well-known area for excellent olive oil.
Are you going to be, who is your biggest buyer? I mean, who do you sell to mostly? The States or locally?
No, France is still, you know, it's funny. About 30% goes to France. Uh-huh. About 30% goes to Germany. What's absolutely unbelievable, incredible, is the Germans are using a lot of olive oil now. It's a change in the last few years. About 10 to 15% goes to the United States. Unfortunately, the dollar is really not helping us, and I see those numbers going down. They used to be higher. And we try to stay in and survive, but we actually are selling at margins close to zero, if not zero, just to stay in this market, which I have a lot of affection for and which is a very loyal market. We'll see what happens, but I hope the exchange rate is gonna turn around because it's really not helping our products to sell in your shops.
Yeah, I know. I know the feeling. Well, how about the internet? How has that helped in sales?
It's interesting. So you know, I was in the high tech business before, and we have a site which is very technical, but we don't sell on the internet. The reason is that we have many, many, many shops selling our products in area like Pennsylvania, plenty little places around the world. And if we sell on the internet, we are sending the signal that we may ignore them, or we may take that business away. So we will be coming out with an internet site, so our loyal buyer can buy from us direct and get their oil shipped to them, even, you know, if they think about it at night. But we want to maintain that network of ambassadors, which are all those fine food shops that you have everywhere, more and more that can talk about the product, can help taste many different oils, and we, the producer, have to be part of that. So it's a little difficult. It's a toss-up game. We will do it, but we're not 100% convinced that this is the way to go.
Yeah. Well, I think the taste of your oil speaks for itself, and that's definitely a good sale point.
Thank you, Jeremy.
What's your favorite way of using your olive oil in cooking? How do you like to use it on your food?
Simple, as you know, in very simple dishes. An olive oil is an ingredient by itself, and of course, you know, we can do elaborate cooking with it. But nowadays, it's all about products more than it is about recipes. So, an example would be: I was talking about potatoes. Potatoes and olive oil makes a wonderful dish. Vegetables, steamed vegetables, great asparagus right now with a little bit of olive oil is wonderful. I would use it hot. I like to heat up our olive oil, not to cook with it, not use as a grease in the pan,
sure,
but use as a finishing oil that you drizzle over something, and you get the smell, fresh smell, you get the length. For example, a fish, a good fish, steamed or pan-fried, and you just drizzle that olive oil over it, you'll get the taste of the fish, and then you'll get the finish of the olive oil. Of course, it goes very well in salads, but salads, you can use a lesser oil in salads, because in salad, many olive oils are very good. But when you heat an olive oil, when you bring temperature to it, then you have to have an excellent olive oil with zero defect, and it's more difficult.
Yeah, I like them with artichokes. I make them artichaut barigoule.
Oh, yes.
It's just a marriage made in heaven. It's really wonderful.
Yes, that's one of my preferred dishes, and that's what my mother-in-law makes for me. Artichaut barigoule.
Yeah, it's great with fish.
Yes, lucky you that you know how to do that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long dish. It's a dish where you have to cook for quite a bit of time, right?
Yeah, well, I use the really small baby artichoke, so those are really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You were saying that olive oil is like a commodity now. Do you think that, and I hope this won't happen, that olive oil will be used for powering engines and cars?
It actually doesn't work for that.
Oh, good.
It's one of the few oils. But what you're saying is funny. What's happening right now is you're seeing that canola oil is getting more expensive. All of those sunflower seed oil, all of those are used for fuel, biofuels.
Sure.
And it has a funny effect on olive oil. Now people are going to get their grease, their fat from an olive oil. And consequently, what we have to do, we have to be careful ourselves to differentiate between the olive oil, which is the one which is the fat, regular olive oil, of course, extra virgin, but inexpensive, that we can buy at Costco, for example, and at a very good price ratio. And we have to be careful not to mix that with the the ingredients, the superb ingredients, the aromats, the condiment that can be the type of our oils. And there is actually two types of oils. I don't know if I make myself understand, but basically there is grease, which is the cheap olive oil, but good for health.
Yeah.
And then there is the fun one, which is the one that you use to finish a dish.
Sure. One last question. How can or can people come and visit your farm?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, the little, I don't know if you heard that little ring in the background.
Yeah.
It's actually people coming in and out. I'm trying to turn it off. I'm having a hell of a time to turn it off. Yes, it's, for example, today is Saturday. It's a sunny day, and we have people stopping by, many people stopping by in and out. And they can visit the meal. Of course, we speak English, my wife and I, and we take the right amount of time for the people to understand the process and actually be in situation. We show them how to make the oil, and then we make them taste different type of oils, and they leave the meal with a better knowledge about olive oil.
Great. Well, I wanted to visit you last summer, but I kind of hurt my back, and I had this big idea about riding my bike down from Lyon to visit, and I ended up really hurting my back while I was bike riding with my brother-in-law in Switzerland. But hopefully when the dollar comes back up, I'll definitely come by and visit and sample more oil again.
Well, you just got a rain check today. I just gave you a rain check.
Oh, great. Okay, thanks
well,
very much.
People like you, Jeremy, makes our business fun. People like you promote good products. I have a lot of respect for you and what you do. So I do thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
You have a good day, Jeremy.
Okay, au revoir.
And up to see you here. Bye-bye.
Bye.